Hello,
Hello,
hello. Oh, there we
what's
go.
up?
Hey.
How you doing?
Welcome. I'm doing good.
Alrighty.
I just discovered that my desk was falling apart, so I'm glad I realized that now. And otherwise, I shudder to think about the whole thing falling down on me while I'm at it.
That would be bad.
Yeah,
Very
that would be
bad.
bad. Welcome everyone to JavaScript Jam. I am Ishan Nand, VP of Product for the Edu Applications platform.
And I am Anthony Campolo, developer advocate at Edgio.
And JavaScript Jam is we like to call it an open mic for anything web development or JavaScript related. Basically anything in front end is on topic. We like to be audience driven as well as inform. So we have a newsletter which Anthony wonderfully curates. And if you go to javascriptjam.com, you can go click on newsletter and you can see this week's episode, which Anthony just put up there on the Jumbotron and mailed out this morning. We sometimes go based off the topics in the newsletter, and you can look at that, but we're very flexible. Like I said, we tend to be audience driven, so feel free to raise your hand and you can ask a question on a certain topic or change the topic of conversation at any time. We like to be, driven by what's of interest to you. Some of our favorite conversations have been when somebody asks a question in the audience and we don't know the answer and somebody else in the audience has an answer. So don't hesitate to raise your hand and come up to the stage. We'd love to hear from you. As much as Anthony and I like to talk to each other, we do that all the time at work. This is one of my favorite meetings of the
Indeed, we
week.
do.
Yeah, because it means I get to interface with the market. Anthony, anything I forgot or left out?
No, I think that's good. I just want to say hey to Rishi and Bro Nifty in the audience. I just threw them invites, whether they can speak or not. We'll see if they come up.
Hey guys, good to see you again. Oh,
Looks like we
there's
got
Bro
Bro
Nifty.
Nifty.
Hey, what's up?
Yes, hello, gentlemen.
Long time most loyal fan.
Yes, long time no talk.
Yeah, man, how you been?
Good.
Did you?
How were your
Yeah,
holidays?
good.
Very good, very good. Just got a new job. I'm trucking. I'm driving all over the country, hauling freight.
Really? Wow. Do you like it?
Actually, I do.
That's good. I mean, you probably got a lot of time to like listen to
Yeah,
podcasts and music and stuff like that.
absolutely, absolutely. I'm living and breathing these Twitch streams and these podcasts and different things. Yeah, it's great.
Looks like we got Rishi too.
Hey, do you hear me? It's all
I
yeah,
do.
awesome.
Rishi, great to hear from you.
Hey, Sean. Yeah, we have to have that call, but yeah, it's always good to join JavaScript Jam.
Yeah, thanks for joining. Did you guys get the newsletter? And is there anything, you saw of interest? Otherwise, we'll jump into the first topic or anything on your mind in the current state of web development before we
Yeah,
jump.
I'd be
Yeah.
curious if there's like any cool projects you're working on or just things you're excited about.
Oh yeah, so I'm working on Astro font lately, and it's like next font just for the astrocytes. So it's recently been used in Rising Stars JS website, and I think the
Nice.
what I see going on in the ecosystem right now is this debate of React and how it's being led, between two companies, and yeah, what's the shape it's gonna take, and whether it's gonna be a regression or actually uplift how apps are made or websites are made with React. So I think there was a tweet by Ryan Florence recently about it, that was praising
And
React.
Cassidy too, I
Yeah.
think, and then like Tanner tweeted
Right.
something.
Well,
It was
wait, I missed this. Can you refresh both for myself and the audience? What was the tweet and what was said? Yeah.
I'll go grab some of them, and basically it was kind of a lot of people voicing, I think, kind of separate concerns with React, and then it kind of just became a pile on, I think, at a certain point. So the some were more about like them being influenced heavily by like the team at Next, and some were more about just the complexity of it and how it has kind of strayed from being just client only. And yeah, so I think that this is, there are similar criticisms that I feel like people have made about React for a while. I think it just there was kind of like a moment where everyone felt the need to like express it at once, I guess.
Yeah, I saw Cassidy Williams, I think, also put out a post. I don't know if you saw that.
That's Cassidy, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I saw that. And I thought she opened it really well by being like, "Hey, before you, disregard what I'm saying, I'm really qualified to speak on this." And she's like, "I used to teach React. I was, I'm coming even as an expert. It does feel like there are certain areas that I think are unsatisfactory about it at the moment." So I think it's really, it's very topical. I think it kind of dovetails with what you put in the newsletter this week on like the spectrum of types of apps. But I'm curious, Rishi, where do you land on this? Do you have a thought or opinion, or are you still figuring it out?
Yeah, I'm actually still figuring it out. I did try RSCs, but yeah, again, they turned out to be complex for me initially when I was trying to actually integrate Resend with Next.js, and there were a lot of errors in my CLI that I saw. And yeah, I think there's a gap in understanding of how forms, for example, are supposed to work with RSC and how do you mutate them on client side and stuff like that. So definitely, I feel there's a gap in how development would be in the future. So in some sense they are right about it, but when I see demos of partial pre-rendering by Roche and yeah, I think it's a I don't know, it's a two-sided sword as they say. So it might be beneficial for some use cases, but again strike back at them in some. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. With great power comes great
Right.
responsibility. And I have to say, I kind of like in conceptually what RSC is actually going for. The I think it was Malta, he said it's, if you squint, it's kind of like imagine back to PHP. You can grab what you need on the server, but then you can also then, use the same code and have it do stuff on the client. And to have those interact seamlessly, in some sense, it's like the uber true isomorphic, JavaScript application framework. On the other hand, it comes with a ton of complexity. And if you're trying to build, I don't know, like, maybe even a blog, but even an e-commerce site, do you really need all that complexity? Would something like HTMX just be sufficient? And we talked about that last week with Dan. And I very much, my prediction for 2024 was the biggest competition to Next isn't going to be another React framework. It's going to be HTMX and these others taking the addressable market of sites that are primarily, I'd say, backend engineer driven. And then basically saying, well, we don't have the budget or the scope to be able to have a big, front-end engineering team. We're better off just, putting HTMX on it and being done, at least for now. So I think I think it's going to be an interesting year and see how that fleshes out.
Yeah, I also do see like an increase in HTMX. Maybe it was by Flaviyoscope, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I see a lot of sites going out of HTMX recently. So Rising Stars JS again is built with Astro and HTMX. And yeah, if I see the code right, it does make sense to use a framework if you're just prototyping something out very quickly. But I'm not sure if it does make sense for large apps. Is there any
Yeah.
like production build Next.js like use case websites built with HTMX that you know of, because yeah, I've not been able to locate them for now.
Yeah, I think that actually kind of takes us to the topic, Anthony, that you opened most of the top of the newsletter with, which is the spectrum of apps or the quadrant of apps. Do you want to just briefly walk us through that? Because I think that actually sets the stage for how you make this decision of, do I use RSC? and Next.js, or do I use, you know, something like HTMX?
Yeah, I saw this post shared around a lot. It was about websites versus web apps, which I think is usually kind of like a tired topic, but I thought this was a really good take on it. So they suggested kind of thinking about, usually you have like the static dynamic distinction is kind of one of the biggest things to distinguish like a website versus a web app, like content focused versus interactivity focused. But he adds another axis, which is online versus offline. And then that creates four different quadrants. So you can have basically, depending on whether you're like, if you're dynamic and online, you're real time. If you're dynamic and offline, you're local. If you're static and offline, you're informational. And if you're static and online, you're transactional. I think the transactional one is one that might not be the most obvious just from the name, but I'm kind of referring to sites like Amazon, where it's mostly static content, but you still have some interactivity and you're kind of like interacting with the server, but you always have a full page refresh anytime that happens. And then he takes a bunch of different examples and kind of puts them in there. So if you click through to the newsletter or the post itself, which I'll share, then you can see an image where he puts all the different examples in each quadrant. But yeah, what was your take on this, Ishan?
Yeah, so I thought it's the dichotomy of the future mixed with the dichotomy of the past. So let me explain why I say that. Dichotomy of the past, this static versus dynamic, to me is a really old battle. So the back, in the, 20 years ago, there was this big debate and it split the standards bodies. Like the W3C was the original kind of standard body for what HTML did. And then a bunch of folks broke off creating the WHATWG, WHATWG. And their vision for the web was actually, will sound very familiar. It was, we can build web applications inside HTML. It is a language, you know, for building full-fledged applications, while W3C was trying to create what they were calling the semantic web, and they were just leaning into this idea of the web as basically being documents. And eventually they reconciled, and we get, thanks to kind of the work and the influence of the WHATWG, you know, really powerful front-end frameworks and languages and capabilities within the browsers. I think it was that reconciliation, first that dichotomy and that reconciliation, in some sense to me is like one of the defining moments that eventually gave us the fertile ground that created things like the Jamstack and the rise of JavaScript frameworks. But to me, this is that same dichotomy. This is, you know, static is really what the W3C was going for, and the dynamic is more what WHATWG was going for, if you want to oversimplify. Well, it's not strictly necessarily true. So to me, that was the dichotomy of the old, which still remains relevant today. The north-south in his quadrant, which was the local versus online, I feel like is it's the dichotomy of the future. It, like, the reason I say that is, at least for the web, less so for apps, everything that you think of that's really big and is an application people use is online. Our whole world is networked and interconnected. I would really like to see more of the, you know, the local first stuff. I'd be really interested. I think inside native apps, there's more of that. But I think, so that's a long way of saying that I still think the static versus dynamic dichotomy is the more important dimension than the north-south, just when you look at classifying everything that's out there. If you took all the apps out there and you tried to say, well, where do I see the most, you know, differentiation or use between the horizontal and the vertical axes, and you projected them down, you'd find more distribution on the vertical axis than you would on the horizontal. That's a very mathematical way of looking at it. But basically, that's I think the local, the top north-south is more, I would love to see that, but I don't think it's as relevant. And it doesn't change, I think, the application you build today any more as much as the east west in that chart does. Did that make sense?
So you don't think that it's important to like always have an offline experience? You think people just kind of accept the need to do things online?
Oh no, I think it's important. I would love to see it, but I'm as an observer of the state of the web as it is, not as I wish it to be. I just think the vast majority of applications sit, you know, on the online side.
At least something that could actually change that would be people wanting to have their data on their computer for things like running LLMs and kind of being more conscious of security. So I think it's possible that we could see more of that.
I completely agree. And that's why I call it the dichotomy of the future, right? I think that is actually the battleground where things will be fought. I mean, the whole, you know, pressure, regulatory or, you know, we call it social pressure, is toward it's exactly like that. And being able to own your data. Just look at, you know, the rise of kind of more distributed social networks. I definitely think that's where things are going. I just don't see a lot of that right now.
Yeah, for me, it's like, if it's something that I'm going to collaborate with people on, then it's just going to be online. And for stuff that I'm kind of doing myself, that's where it could be better to have some like offline stuff. But even still, I end up then saving my own stuff in the cloud. So I kind of end up online either way.
Yeah, like here's the really simple way to think about it. Like practically, the last time you were on an airplane and the internet didn't work, right? Like, just what was it like without connectivity? Or you went to the subway.
Like, I wanted to jump out of the plane.
It was like half your phone was useless, right? Maybe three quarters of it. You're like, okay, I can set a timer to see how much longer until I get connectivity
again. I remember Twitter worked, but not images or GIFs. Just the tweets would come in.
Yeah, it's like, just imagine what it's like when you're bandwidth is constrained, let alone when it's gone. I do think that maybe that might change when you've got like a local LLM, you could at least talk to it and it's got a bunch of things, but so much of it is online. So that's why I describe it as the less important dimension. And I guess here's the question I have when I was reading it, like the static versus dynamic dichotomy really does tell you, should I build with JavaScript first or should I build with HTML first, right? Or use HTMX. Like if somebody was like trying to figure out which framework to use, this at least points you in a direction. I'm not as sure what direction the north-south part of that quadrant paints you in, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm curious what you think. Like,
well, it mentions like kind of progressive web apps. Like if you want to be offline, you want to kind of go more towards that angle.
That's true. I mean, maybe we talk this forward, like, and walk through it. Like, does a progressive web app necessarily have to be built with something like React and in a more dynamic first implementation? I can imagine a progressive web app, like a to-do list, could be done as a progressive web app, built with a framework like HTMX. Like HTMX just adds the right capabilities for service workers and a few other things. And actually what I really liked, by the way, about the article is they did talk about things I wasn't aware of. What was that framework? Mavo? Mavo.io. I thought that was really interesting. And that's, you know, that I think could point the way to a, you know, building those types of local first applications without any server backend. In fact, that's a great example of it. I would love if, you know, the one thing that this, you know, this map does is it gets people aware of frameworks like that. So I don't think, maybe I'll take it back. Maybe what this diagram is saying is rather than there's, I guess this is what it is saying now that I pause, there's like two ways to do things. Static and dynamic. So static is like HTML, HTMX, and dynamic is React. There is four different ways to do things. And not just here are the four examples of websites for those use cases. The use cases might drive four different architectures. and here's the right framework for each of those architectures. And we've got right now frameworks for, we've classified across two, but really we should have four different architectures. I'm not sure what they would be. So, you know, the architecture for the informational is HTML. The architecture for the transactional is HTMX. The architecture for the upper right, which is dynamic and online, is React or RSC or Next. And then the architecture for the bottom right, which is informational and local, is Mavo or Mavo. Maybe that's
so what is yeah, what yeah. is Mavo like? Can you describe it?
Yeah, so I honestly don't know much about it. This article that you found actually was what turned me onto it. It basically extends HTML syntax in the same way that HTMX does to describe web applications. And this idea of actually, by the way, of, you know, declarative way of describing applications embedded in the HTML is actually an old concept. There are a couple other frameworks that used to do it. In fact, we used to work with a team that built one. It was called, let me see if the page is still up there. Yeah, Uranium.js actually worked similar to this because basically we're in a situation where we needed to add capabilities to a site in a composable manner on top of existing kind of classic HTML page. And the easiest way to do that was just to mark up the HTML. But what it adds to it is more commands for manipulating and storing data in the cloud or locally by just changing HTML attributes. And it'll do things like performing calculations. And what actually got me excited about it, if you go to mavo.io,
it's not the Jellotron.
There we go. You can see they've got an example of an editable homepage. They have another example of, I always go to this example, which is to-do list. It's the second example down there. And you basically, you know, at the beginning, you say, here's your app name. You then declare where it's going to store things. So you say locally in the browser. And then, you know.
So you what can kind of say this is like HTML with state.
Yes. Yes, that's a good way to say it. HTML state, and then look at how the action is defined. So do you see like the button has MV action and it's like delete task where done. It's almost, you know, pseudocode. And I think if you squint and think a little bit, it's not hard to imagine combining this with like an LLM, especially one that maybe is native to the browser or runs locally, where you could entirely describe your application in a mix of like you can already, you know, describe your application in natural language. And they're great examples of, you know, people, you know, describe, build this application, it builds it, right? But maybe if you want a little more mix of control and complexity, you could imagine somebody using a markup language that combines natural language with a markup language to control an application, how it gets done. And that's what I think, like, if I was looking at, you know, Mavo, I'd be like, oh, that's the way to go. It's to take this and say, rather than just simply, you know, creating instructions, let's call it program instructions in HTML, embedding that in HTML, embed natural language instructions on what should happen and describing how things should happen. And then mix that maybe with, you know, natural language descriptions of what it looks like in this weird mix of HTML and natural language. That could be a really interesting way of defining applications going forward.
Yeah, you know, I see so many of these projects now that are really like HTML forward. And, you know, even going back to like Astro, that was one of the things they were always saying. So I'm curious kind of how far this trend is going to go. Because looking at these examples, they look kind of just like, you know, early days, like Angular and Vue, where you're just like adding these kind of like tags into your HTML.
Yeah, I mean, there is a point at which you cross that, again, the boundary on that chart between static and dynamic, where it gets so dynamic or complex, you're actually building a full-fledged application. Like, if you were going to build Figma and you said, well, let me start and build the first version this way, I would say, well, okay, you can do that for like product validation, but no, you're going to have to throw that architecture away and rebuild it. There's a point at which, yeah, this doesn't work or make sense for a certain class of applications. And it won't stand up to a certain level of complexity. But there's so many websites where you can just use money as a proxy for value. Whether it's like Salesforce is a great example, or buying stuff on Amazon, or pick an e-commerce site where the level of interactivity may not have to require that much JavaScript sophistication. You may want, I think what got us here was, and I think that was the other thing that it was reading the article that was kind of left out. It's kind of ignoring the pressure that was put on the web. If you go back to, when this split happened between the WWTC and W3C, kind of around the same time, although maybe say a little after, you had, the iPhone come out. And there was this existential crisis, I feel like, for the web, where people just loved the interactivity and smoothness of native apps. And there was, I think, a feeling that in order to compete, the web needed to not only deliver that same quality experience, but also architect their applications the same way. We need to build our applications, as large globs of code that talk to APIs the same way that native applications are. It's the only way to, build a PWA, for example, even though that's not technically true. And the other thing that was alluded to either in this or one of the other links you shared in the newsletter was things like the Vue transition API and invokers. And I think they point the way to building web applications using simpler primitives that feel more like classic multi-page apps or like classic hypertext without having to have all the JavaScript, but still delivering a compelling experience. So in the case of Vue Transition API, you can have that kind of nice sliding feel, but you don't have to necessarily code a whole single page app with that level of complexity. You can just keep sending basically mostly HTML. I think that's going to be part of the move back to a lot of these tools. And Astra, I think, has been one of those frameworks that's been, at the forefront of great examples of using that with Vue Transition API. Actually, Astra has been the other thought I had was just how great Astra has been about melding itself to the moment, or at least being flexible to the moment, whether it's HTMX or Islands architecture or a variety of other things. It's just
Yeah, I
every
feel like they don't
time
talk
it's
about
come,
Islands at all anymore. Like, I can't remember the last time they mentioned Islands. That was like the thing when it launched, and now it's just kind of like, eh.
Well, I feel like here's kind of the product marketing thing about it. I think they picked up some amount of attention, and you keep moving from thing to thing. Our last episode, Dan was talking about how he feels like Next did a really good job of kind of embrace and extend, and it did it to things like the Jamstack. And I feel like that's another way of looking at it is just staying relevant to the moment. And I feel like Astro is doing a really good job of that, whether it's Islands or now with HTMX. You shared, for example, that video. I think it's Harrington doing a HTMX demo with Astro. It's just like whatever the new thing is, Astro, or it was Solid, used to be part of Astro. I think Solid moved out, but it's just Astro's there. And I think that's only going to work to their advantage, and it speaks to the flexibility of the platform as well. So if I'm wrong about my bet that the biggest threat to Next is going to be HTMX, I'll say that the most likely way I'm wrong is because of Astro and the flexibility it gives you. That's the other contender, although technically you can use Astro with even a non-React framework.
But the concern that I feel is, how do you server render HTMX, even if it's dynamic, right? With RSCs, what you get is, even though they're complex to understand, but you still get that server side render with interactivity, at the cost of network waterfall, let's say. But how do you do that with HTMX? So th that's like the blocker for, taking over next ecosystem is what I feel.
I so I guess the way I look at it is HTMX essentially requires to be server run. Like your starting point, I think, for HTMX is a page that is already, in my head, mostly server rendered. And you're basically marking it up with HTMX to describe. Like there has to be something that could even be non-JavaScript. It could be PHP or Java. And they want to add interactivity to the page, they're probably going to use pick something like HTMX. So I guess my answer to that is when I said, sites that are already, let's call it backend driven, they're almost inherently already server rendered. Does that address your question, or maybe I
Right,
misunderstood
so
it?
looking into that, if you're talking about Django sites or maybe Flask sites, so I think those are like servers rendered mostly around backend, right? It does make sense there, but I'm not sure about how to actually takes over next or threatens their ecosystem because those are the kind of people who are not shipping Django sites or Flask sites or maybe Streamlit apps. So that feels like a very different area of concern, probably. Does that make sense?
I think we're saying the same thing. Yeah, I'm saying that you were both saying the same thing. Like, if you're building that type of site, you probably weren't going to use Next.
Right.
I think there was a lot of pressure on folks, in the past decade or so, which was, oh, you the right way a sharp engineering team is builds a website, regardless of what the backend is you build it in Next or you build it with React. You need to have React is the way sharp engineering can build. In fact, even if you don't, even if you're planning to send just raw HTML or you're just a bunch of APIs, you spin up a node server just so you could have something that creates a React or JavaScript heavy experience, so you can get that kind of native like quality. And I think what basically HTMX is giving people is the license to say no and push back against that and say no, we are a Python shop, or we are mostly backend shop and we just need a little interactivity. It's overkill to add all this complexity just for this because it doesn't fit. We don't have the we may not even have the budget for a large engineering
Right.
team. I think we're saying the same thing,
Yeah, I see it
which is
now.
that it wasn't a good fit to begin with. And I but I think a lot of those people faced, a kind of headwind that said that they needed to do that, partially for the reason that, not only was it this kind of engineering, like this is the sharpest technical way to do it, but also again, to compete with native apps, people thought websites needed to be built this way.
Right, I see.
So you tell me, I think, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I do see that. Coming and taking it over by actually migrating back to the process of server rendering your Python apps and just adding a little interactivity on top with HTMX. I think that's if that's gonna happen, then it's gonna add a lot of what do you call it, learning curve to the existing journeys of the people have heavily invested in React. Plus, again, yeah, take over the system of Next and yeah, that would be huge, man.
Well, I mean, so my statement last episode was actually that I don't think you can compete with React and Next, with the same customer base. It's like disruptive innovation, right?
Right.
There's already like an entrenched competitor. The only way you're going to displace it is say there's this other larger market or this other customer set, and maybe we can cater to their unmet needs, right? You don't want to like the Sun Tzu, you don't attack strength on strength. So I think trying to unseat Next by just building another JavaScript framework, in the traditional sense, or even another React framework, is basically what I'm saying is it's just harder to do because they're the entrenched competitor. And so what you have to do is you have to find in classic disruptive innovation, another audience where they're your application or your solution to the problem may not be good for the traditional market, but it's good enough for some subset, and they get excited about it and enthusiastic, and gradually you build up enough capabilities that you can eventually start stealing away from the larger market that you couldn't go after directly. So that's basically what I was saying. I think we're saying roughly the same thing, which is that it's not a good fit. Like if you took a Next developer and you gave them HTMX and they need to build, I don't know, Figma or even maybe a dashboard, they're going to be like, no, this doesn't make sense. It's a poor fit for that. But there are simpler sites where people were told you need to build it with Next. And I think the tide is turning on that. And people are like, oh, maybe I could just use HTMX instead. That's just my two cents.
Right.
Okay.
I could also see WordPress sites using it. But yeah, there needs to be a middleware or edge layer at the top based along with the WordPress sites probably to handle that interaction.
I could totally see it for WordPress sites.
Right. So that would be a totally different market from Next, I think. And not totally, but yeah, I think it's a big market to cater to.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest, right? 40% of the internet. Yep. I've actually thought a lot about this. There was this project, Frontity, that tried to be the canonical way of building sites with React plus WordPress and in a headless manner. There was a lot of, attack on kind of the WordPress ecosystem from kind of the, Jamstack / React ecosystem as well. WordPress also uses React for the new version of the editor. In fact, I saw a comment thread, maybe it was actually in response to the thread you guys were talking about, where one of the folks, oh, I know where I saw it. It was on Hacker News in response to a Cassidy Williams article. And it was actually from one of the people who decided to use React, who was part of the team that decided to use it. I think maybe if they were to do it over again, maybe it might make sense to use HTMX. But at the time they made that decision, React was clearly ascendant. And I could certainly see a lot of value in something like HTMX in that ecosystem. I mean, just look at like half the plugins that are, call it pro user level, they give you some capability to create like a pseudo markup that lets you describe your use case anyways, whether it's like the form builders and things like that. I could totally see somebody saying, hey, well, why don't we just give them HTMX? It'd be nice if that was built in to Gutenberg. In fact, I think that would make a really interesting WordPress plugin, is something that just, let you build stuff with HTMX right there inside the editor. I've actually recently been a lot more bullish on WordPress or Gradual, I'd say, over the last few years. But I think there's a lot of potential there. I completely agree with you.
What are some of the top sites that you have, built or experienced with WordPress? Because I'm wanting to dive into that space because I've been lately into the frameworks. But I want to expand beyond that. What are the best WordPress sites that you have seen?
In terms of size or quality?
Yeah, I think it's about the size that they're serving. So let's say a Next.js production website versus what is that site that you see in WordPress?
I actually looked at this the other day. I don't know them offhand. Let's see. Most trafficked WordPress sites. Let's see. Websites using WordPress with high traffic volume. So, according to BuiltWith, which was the first or second link on Google, we've got, so this may not, because it's built based on their automated system, I'm assuming, Bloomberg, booking.com, interestingly, CNET, you're going to find a lot of content.
Oh, okay.
Sites.
Yeah.
NPR.org, it says T-Mobile.com. Let's see, TripAdvisor. What else? I think I said this. I know when I said this, it was actually a year ago. I went back for the 2024 predictions. I went and listened to our ones at 2023, and WordPress came up, and I said you should pick the framework or the technology that'll optimize for the thing that needs to move the fastest. If you're building a, like a Figma, then the most important thing is like being able to push out new features. So you want something that lets your developers move the fastest. But if you're building out like a news site, the thing that needs to move the fastest is to get content out
Right.
there, right? And that's hugely important. So then build something that's a CMS system at heart, like WordPress, because you need that more than you need to be able to push out new features or flashiness. Let's see, WP Beginner has Sony Music, PlayStation, TechCrunch, Time Magazine, CNN, Pressroom, Disney Books, Hypebeast, Wired, Microsoft News, TED Blog, Yelp, Vogue, let's see, the Mozilla Blog, the Harvard Gazette. What's really interesting, though, I noticed, is some of these, it's not their primary site. So, for example, they have the New York Times Company. It's the corporate website behind the New York Times. So it's not the New York Times runs on it, but their corporate website, they're like the easiest thing to spin up for our website is this. So like another one. So Vogue, it says, it looks like the main Vogue runs on it, but like Yelp blog runs on it, but right, Yelp does not. Etsy Journal, but not Etsy. So they're associated blog. So it's still very much on the blog side. Now I do know they acquired WooCommerce to do a lot of e-commerce. But I think what you find is a lot of folks in e-commerce either graduate past a certain like total merchandise volume size towards a true e-commerce platform, right? That's not fair to say, to a more, let's call it enterprise e-commerce platform like Shopify or Magento if they want to stay in PHP world. I'm more used to large, you know, e-commerce sites on Magento. But, you know, there's when you're already running 40% of the internet, I wouldn't count WordPress out. And I could certainly see them going after that segment as well. Let's see. Reader's Digest, 538. Let's see. Variety. This is on WP Beginner's website. Let's see what else. Time Magazine came up. Let's see, this is on InfoStrides list, but, 9to5Mac. So those are some examples. But again, mostly informational, you know, going back to the post that Anthony referenced in our newsletter, most of these are in that quadrant of informational, because the most important thing is, you know, spitting out content. And WordPress is great for enabling content creators. That's the thing that needs to move the fastest. I actually think that WordPress is actually a good MVP framework for certain areas, but that's like a nascent idea that's developing in my head. If you want to spin something up really quickly, it does have login and some of those other things if you're willing to squint. I plan to do some experimentation with that. So, but that's my thoughts there. Does that answer your question?
Cool. Yeah, I just wanted to know, like, so I'm seeing our visualizing an intersection between interactivity and content rich, but I feel that WordPress sites are more like content rich, or as you said, like informational side of the graph. Yeah, so that would be, you know, running parallel with the next story, interactive ecosystem compared to the content ecosystem. Not sure, you know, how can I extend my skills to that particular space. But yeah, I've seen websites, you know, making it easier to deploy WordPress websites and make them faster, dynamic. But I still wonder what values does that bring compared to just running on WordPress.
Yeah, I cannot claim myself at this point an expert in that ecosystem to know. I've helped people with their WordPress sites.
Right.
But I do think, what do I want to say? As somebody coming from, shall we say, the Jamstack, a very JavaScript-centric world, I do think WordPress has been underappreciated. You know, I said back a few years ago, it may turn out the biggest headless CMS is actually WordPress. I think that may not turn out to be the case. But I still think it's got a lot of potential, and I'm really interested to see where they take it. So.
All right.
Anthony, was there anything else on that, or should we move to the rest of the newsletter that
Yeah,
you
I think
have?
that's probably good. Yeah, were there anything else, other links that piqued your interest?
So let's see. There's another one about HTMX. I didn't get a chance to look at the one on the state of benchmarking. There was a podcast episode which I didn't get a chance to listen to before, but it was Dino in 2024. Was there anything interesting that came out of that, or what you thought of it?
I haven't listened to that one yet, actually, but it's a Pod Rocket, so I know it's going
Okay.
to
The other one that caught my attention was the streamlining AI one. Did you get a chance to listen to that one?
Yeah, so that one is really, really interesting because I've been looking for more kind of like JavaScript AI related stuff. So they talk a little bit about Super Agent, which is like another one of these AI like frameworks that is probably fairly similar to something like LangChain. It's for building like AI assistants. So I think we're seeing this a lot with stuff that are like, what are they called? Agents that are basically like LLMs that can kind of follow instructions. So this is a project I hadn't tried yet, but they have a JavaScript client. Obviously, that's why they were on JavaScript Jabber. So probably gonna check this out along with all the other stuff I've been checking out with AI JavaScript stuff.
So how is it different than, say, LangChain, for folks who are familiar with that?
It doesn't seem like it integrates with as much stuff. I think it's because like LangChain kind of you can plug in like almost anything, whereas this seems a little bit more self-contained. It lets you connect to some data sources and then like kind of create your own agents. So I'm not sure actually what models it works with. I would assume you can probably do like ChatGPT and stuff like that. But yeah, I would have to try it to really see what the biggest differences are.
Okay, so whereas, LangChain, I think you can use it for, well, you can use it for all sorts of, call it orchestration of a workflow that is enabled or even AI is central. My impression from briefly looking at it is that this is entirely for, assistance. So rather than, you might use LangChain to enhance an existing workflow by sticking it inside it. This is entirely for building a your own version of ChatGPT or a custom GPT, but for your own unique use case. But it's still like a chat-driven interface. It maybe integrates with the things that you control with it, but it's more for that. Whereas LangChain is can do that, but it can do other things. Is that fair to say?
LangChain has an agent's capability, which is like you could think of this as like just the equivalent of that. And then it has things that are called like workflows. So you can basically it's like a sequence of agents that run in a specific order, and then they have integrations with things like Algolia, Bing, Wolfram Alpha. Looks like they also have OpenAI. Oh, that's Open API. There's a ChatGPT plugin and ChatGPT or GPT Vision. So it must be multimodal as well. And then they have
And
vector database things as well, connectors.
so is this all like what do they use as the LLM? Is it flexible? Like LangChain, you can swap in and out particular models. Do they prescribe certain models or vector databases for handling it?
It's not super clear. Like in their, I'm reading their concept, their docs. There's a page called Concepts, and they have a section called LLMs. And they're like, language models are the core computational models that power the functionality of an agent. And it says in the context of Super Agent, they're used to understand, generate text, I trained on vast amounts of text data and learned to predict likelihood of sense, but it doesn't like say what the LLM actually is.
Got it. Okay, I'm gonna look through. Oh, I found an example where it references an OpenAI key.
Yeah, that's the first
Okay.
example. So,
Yeah. Okay. So it's again an orchestration layer that manages essentially models and these other things. So whether it's the vector data, it's kind of the glue, right, between everything. Okay, that's an interesting episode. I'll have to check out. There was another one on JavaScript performance wins and new Node.js features. Well, actually, why don't I pause here? Why don't I turn around and ask you what you thought was the most interesting when you were putting this together, or is there something you left on the cutting edge floor, cutting room floor?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I thought the article on NPM in review was interesting because it has a ton of data in it, and like it ranks the top 50 packages by how many other packages depend on them. What do you think is number one?
Oh, I don't. I should have an idea, but what is number one?
TypeScript.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
I thought it was interesting though. Second is React, and that's pretty amazing to me because NPM predates React by a few years.
By dependency count. So the number of projects that depend on it. I mean, you're right, because NPM came from Node, and Node originally was back end, and React is until RSC has been front end. So I'm pulling up the link right now. And again, folks can go to javascriptjam.com, go to this week's newsletter in the header, and see this. But yeah, we've got TypeScript, React, ESLint, Types Node, React DOM, Jest, Prettier, TSLib, Babel, Lodash, Axios, TS Node, TS Jest. I don't know what RIMRAF is. Then Webpack, Rollup, Vite.
RIMRAF is like RM-RF, but a package.
Wait.
It's used to delete node packages.
Wow. Okay, that makes sense. Webpack rollup. And then Husky. What is Husky? Do you know what that
Husky is
is?
like hooks, or like Git pre-commit hooks.
Oh yeah, I see that. Okay.
Which some people like hate and on principle will not use.
Okay. And then I see SAS. So what, anything that surprised you here on the list?
Like I said, kind of the fact that React was so high, but mostly like this is mostly what I would expect, especially because most of these are like what you would just use to set up a basic project, like things like ESLint and Prettier are most like installed by default by most people. So I think this kind of shows when someone's spinning up a project, what are like the things that they're always going to download? And that's mostly what we see here.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. But I mean, this isn't just downloads. This is things that these are dependencies, right? If I'm interpreting this correctly. And so, yeah, they have a chart below, which is downloads. And so my interpretation of this is that it shows it's validation of your sense that the front-end ecosystem is massive and keeps creating new frameworks and new stuff and just will not stop, spinning up new forks and variations and new projects. Way more so than the backend system does. Because to me, this is number of projects that reference, not even by popularity. And if I'm interpreting this correctly, it's just, showing how much people are building things that reference React, whether it's a UI component library or something like that. It's just showing that health of the, or churn.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
it's like
Vue
the
is
front end
also in
ecosystem.
here,
Yeah.
but like
Yep.
Express is just barely comes in like at number 50, and that's the only like server side
Oh,
framework at
yeah,
all I
there it
even
is.
see.
Yeah, right there at the bottom is Express. You're right. Like you should be asking yourself, why isn't Express? SAS is even higher than Express, right? That just goes to show. You look at this, you could just take a binary weighting of this and say, is this front end or back end? Maybe you'd say neutral for TypeScript, right? And then, if you took the expected value of this would be extremely heavily front end. And so it just shows the amount of project sprawl, if you want to be negative about it, or health or innovation or experimentation, if you want to be positive about it in the front end ecosystem. Wow, that's really fascinating. I love data like that that tells you something about the ecosystem. That was a really interesting find.
Yeah, this is from Socket, which is that company that is based around like giving you higher level security information over NPM, because NPM is like, a security nightmare.
I liked that they had what is the package with the longest name?
Yeah.
And those are interesting. There's one like this package exports the number 214 and its name is also 214 characters long, which is the longest name currently allowed by the NPM registry to see how a name that long would look if you did it right. Like they literally, it's like you'd ask ChatGPT come up with a 214 character name for an NPM package. And then the other one was like, if you want to get the sum of two numbers where those two numbers are chosen by finding the largest of two out of three numbers and squaring them, which is multiplying them by itself, then you should input three numbers into this function and it will do that for
Who
you.
uses this
Which is,
language?
these are not, yeah, exactly. I think these are, this is just like the number of dependencies must be like one or zero. And then there's the person who just did all AAAA.
That's funny. That
So
one doesn't have a
that's,
link, though. How do I know that one's actually real?
yeah, I'm gonna make my project depend on that. And it'll be all Bs. So that was interesting. The other part that I thought was interesting in this post, as I'm looking at it at the very end, is the package with the most maintainers, which I thought was interesting. These are not what I
Almost
would have
all the
expected. Yeah.
BBC, almost all of them. It's
Yeah.
interesting.
I wouldn't have, and then Condé Nast. So I wouldn't have expected, but props to BBC for being so collaborative. That's really interesting. I don't really know how to interpret that. But it sounds like a positive. So that's very interesting. Well, we're coming up right at the top of the hour. I think we should probably call it for this week.
Yep.
Thank you everybody for tuning into JavaScript Jam. Just a reminder, we now do JavaScript Jam every 2 weeks at noontime Pacific time zone, every Wednesday. So we will see you again in 2 weeks here at JavaScript Jam. Thank you everyone for tuning in.
All right, catch you next time. Thanks for coming, Rishi.
My pleasure to catch you, everyone. Have a great one.
Bye.
Bye.